Tuesday, August 11th, 2026, and you're listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Today on the program, we're in the book of Psalms, with Psalm 84, with part one of a message titled, The Joy of God's House.
What makes Psalm 84 so profound is he's describing the complete freedom and ability to come to the Lord's house, and he has found it so satisfying, so fulfilling in that freedom. And that has become the treasure of his life. That's become the place of the real pearl of great price. That 6 days when he's out in a hard week, he's able to look and say, how I long to taste every day what I'm experiencing on the Sabbath in the Lord's house.
And now here's today's message from Pastor Chris.
I had anticipated to begin a series this morning with you, but I was burdened to preach Psalm 84, and after I had finished the work on the psalm, and I realized that I had, the time that I've been with you, we've really done a sort of short series here on worship. I just wasn't bright enough to see that I was doing a series. So, Psalm 84 is a wonderful psalm to consider that this morning. I want to sort of close my series this morning with that psalm, and then we'll begin something next week. Tonight, of course, we do start a series. So, Psalm 84, a psalm of the sons of Korah. And so we'll read the entirety of the psalm. How lovely is your dwelling place, O Lord of hosts! My soul longs, yes, faints for the courts of the Lord. My heart and flesh sing for joy to the living God. Even the sparrow finds a home, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may lay her young. At your altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God, blessed are those who dwell in your house, ever singing your praise. Blessed are those whose strength is in you, in whose heart are the highways to Zion. As they go through the valley of Baca, they make it a place of springs. The early rain also covers it with pools. They go from strength to strength. Each one appears before God in Zion. O Lord God of hosts, hear my prayer. Give ear, O God of Jacob. Behold our shield, O God. Look on the face of your anointed. For a day in your courts is better than 1,000 elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of wickedness. For the Lord God is a sun and shield. The Lord bestows favor and honor. No good thing does he withhold from those who walk uprightly. O Lord of hosts, blessed is the one who trusts in you. May the Lord bless the hearing of his word. We live in a world of misery and sickness and death, and we often wonder, in our day, in the times that we live especially, what is coming next? Do you ever feel like that? What in the world can come next? I mean, honestly, it is what they say, dog eat dog. Nobody seems to care about anyone else. Everyone is after their own gain today. Greed has overrun things. And we say with David, as we prayed, help, for the godly man ceases. Where is he anymore? Is there justice? Is there truth? And where do we find these things at all? It feels like the whole world around us is going to hell in a handbasket. And I look over the short time that I've existed under the sun, the thing and the way that things have progressed, at least as I see it and experience it, it's been awful. It's been awful. I mean, even 30 years ago, it was seemed simpler, as they all say, and if you go back, simpler and simpler. Post 9/11, my kids are kind of introduced, I feel, to a violent world that I just either didn't see or didn't realize growing up, and here they are, and they're stuck in the middle of this, and I just don't know what they will face in the years to come. Morally, how much worse can it get? And I'm concerned, you know, I'm concerned. I know this stuff happens to a world and under a world under the sway of the evil one, but it hurts to see all of the conflict even in the church. Hurts. It hurts to see struggling saints. It hurts to see all the fighting. And I struggle to see all the bitterness and all the dissensions and all the heresies and add to it all the pain then that often in the life of the church that happens in the members and the things that go on. I grow weary of seeing parents lament over children. Children who are not walking with the Lord. And I saw that a lot up north. It was a sad phenomenon, by the way. Many in the church all their lives, their children not walking with the Lord. And I look at my children and I think, well, you know, what will happen with my children? I train them up to walk in the Lord. What will be and what will happen? And I know all the work the Lord had to do with me. He's got a lot of work to do with them. Got a lot of work to do with them. Look at the struggle. Look at the pain. The older I get, the more I see these things are a reality. And the thing that I want is a pain-free life. The thing I'm sort of searching for is a life without struggle, and I'm desperately trying to hold on to that. I'm desperately trying to create that. I'm good at trying to create that, but no matter what really I try to do, there's no way of avoiding the pain of it all when the tragedy strikes, right? I mean, at some point, if I've got it good now, I know that could change tomorrow. And it's going to change tomorrow. It's for all of us. You ever thought ahead to that? You're comfortable today and you're sitting and listening to a sermon today and life's going well and you're about your life and you're making money and things are going well. But have you thought about the day when it's not going well? Have you thought about the day when tragedy strikes or when it really gets hard? Then what? What next? Psalm 84 will help us to think a little bit about that. Psalm 84 is an amazing psalm, one of the most, for me, one of the most important psalms. I love this psalm. It's had an impact upon me like no other. I'd heard it read before, but I never really understood what it was telling me. And when I finally understood and the light went on about this psalm, it became my favorite. And that's the beauty, I guess, of being a new pastor. You can kind of preach your favorites up front. Spurgeon called it one of the sweetest psalms of peace. And yes, it is. What makes it so beautiful is how simple this psalm is. How profoundly simple and peaceful it is. Its message is really clear. If you read it carefully, it's a very clear message to us. The psalm is about enjoying God. Knowing God. Enjoying Him. It shows us and it sets before us this morning what a fruitful life really looks like. A life that is blessed of God. Don't you want to know that? Don't you want to see that? Don't you want to understand that? Of course you do. It's an intense expression of the psalmist's heart for the living God. And what he's saying to us this morning is that because he has learned to value that which is most important in this life, because he has found the pearl of great price, he can handle. He has perspective in the valley of Baca. We'll come back to that. He is saying to us this morning, he's experienced it all. He's been through the fight. He's been through the struggle. He knows the sorrows. He's lived the sorrows. And he expresses to us where he found the answer. And we can learn so much from this. I hope that in the short time when we're done here, you say Psalm 84 is now one of my favorites. It's a psalm that teaches us about the blessing of God's presence in the wilderness in which we live. And that God gives wisdom for us to see this. God calls for us to see this, to show us and teach us about the really blessed life. What you have at the beginning of the psalm is a description of his deepest longing. Look at verse 1. How lovely is your tabernacle, O Lord of hosts. My soul longs, yes, even faints, for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. What's he describing? There's two ways of looking at the psalm. There's two ways of looking at it. This psalm is about worship. This song is about enjoying God and worship. I mean, that's at least initially clear. Some think that the sons of Korah are describing an inability to come and to worship the Lord. And they're looking back over that and they're saying, we had the opportunity before, but now our circumstance of life has taken that away. And we're looking back so fondly on that time that we long for. We wish we still had. That's one way of looking at the psalm. My soul faints just to think about the days when I was able to come to worship. Calvin takes that position. That for some period in the life of the psalmist, he was barred from the sanctuary. Now, there are psalms that describe that. Psalm 42 describes that. As the deer pants for the water brook, so pants my soul for the living God. When do I get to come and appear before God? And then he goes on to describe something that's terribly happened to him, where he is taken off in the hills of Hermon and he's far away from Jerusalem and he can't come to the place of God's worship and he longs for it. What a powerful thought that is, isn't it? I would never want to experience that. In this country, we have a lot of freedom today to come and to worship. But I often think to myself, do I really appreciate that? Do I really understand that? If that were taken away from me, which surely could happen and is happening all around this world, if the ability to come and worship were taken away from me, what would it do to me? How would it affect me? Would I have a sort of remorseful moment of how carelessly I treated the Lord and how little I gave to Him and how much I never really valued worship until it was gone? You hear people say that, you know. When it's gone, then I realized how special it was. That's a good way to think about the psalm. I'm not convinced that's the right way to look at the psalm. I believe the great John Calvin was wrong. I believe what makes Psalm 84 so profound, is he's describing the complete freedom and ability to come to the Lord's house. And he has found it so satisfying, so fulfilling in that freedom, in his ability to come. And that has become the treasure of his life. That's become the place of the real pearl of great comfort, of the pearl of great price. That 6 days when he's out in a hard week, he's able to look and say, how I long to taste every day what I'm experiencing on the Sabbath in the Lord's house. That's a whole different kind of scenario. By the way, that's a whole different kind of scenario. How lovely is your tabernacle, O Lord of hosts. That has so much meaning for us. If I have time, I'd like to preach the whole Bible to you. But surely Exodus. And the tabernacle was an amazing structure. The word tabernacle here, it means dwelling place. And I'm sure in the psalmist's mind is the thought of the tabernacle that went up in the wilderness. And this was the place, remember, that God had decided to come down to Israel and to meet with His people. And there you had a series of courts. And it was a great description in Exodus of all of these courts and the altars and the bronze laver and the tent doors and the holy place and the candlestick and the table and then the most holy place, where the throne symbolically was, where God was said to have dwelt between the cherubim. And God's people would gather in the Old Testament. They would come often to the tent door of meeting and they would have worship services. It was a glorious moment in Israel's history when they would do this. We sing the song, God Himself is with us. God Himself was with them. He had come down to them. I love, says the psalmist, to come to where you have come down to meet us. I love that. I long for it. I thirst for it. Notice how intimate, how beautiful, how poetic this is. Deep within my soul, I faint just to be able to come. I want to be there. If we're honest today, did we have that attitude coming this morning? Were we excited to come to the Lord's house? How did we approach coming to the Lord's house? Sunday comes. We sleep in a little bit, throw on our clothes. It's a big rush, especially if you're a family with children, I know. Just to get here, everything seems to go wrong. What is worship to us? What do we think worship is? We often think that the Old Testament, when we look back at the Old Testament, that it was full of all of these laws and requirements and sacrifices. And I remember offhanded statements along the way of people who would say, boy, I'm so glad I live in the New Testament because that must have been just joyless back then. All of these sacrifices and rules and laws. And as I read the psalm, I hear the rebuke of that mentality. I hear the rebuke of that mentality. I hear the psalmist saying that correcting the notion that the worship of God is some kind of chore or some kind of hard demand that God puts on the life of His people. That's not what it was. He's describing for us this morning. He's describing that he has found that coming to the Lord's house was exactly the opposite. How lovely. There's a beauty about this that he's describing. And it wasn't because so much the temple, it wasn't because so much the building. He says here very clearly, my heart cries out for the living God. The worship of you, O Lord, is lovely. It thrills my soul. This is my passion in life. I've found that this is the thing that means the most in life, is the ability to come before you and to be in your presence. It's the most satisfying thing I've ever done with my life. You hear it? It's the most satisfying thing I've ever done with my life. This isn't the only place this is emphasized, by the way. Psalm 27 is also another psalm. And most of you love Psalm 27, I'm sure. It's a beautiful psalm, but it says right in the middle of that psalm, one thing that I've desired of the Lord, that will I seek after. One thing, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in His temple. You see what's being described? That ultimately this was the calm from the storm. This was the most enjoyable, peaceful, blessed thing he could do. And so he describes this experience as that of fainting for the courts. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. He gets to come, and we'll talk about what's really happening here in a second, but he gets to come in response to what's happening and express himself to say thank you to his Lord and to with his mouth sing praises to his God. If there's anything that needs to be reformed today, it's our understanding of worship. And I mean understanding of what it is. We're so into the battles, and these have been going for years, of contemporary and traditional. And have we really listened in that whole discussion to the meaning of worship? The meaning of worship. For many people today, they love to quote Jesus, and they love to say that we no longer worship on this mountain or on that mountain, but in spirit and in truth. And that has become for people a sort of license to say that we no longer need the church and we no longer need to come and worship. It's been the sort of common excuse that we get. And we hear that since the church is not a building, amen, it's a people, I'm the church. And this thought that has prevailed in our day in Christianity has a sound of wisdom. It has a form of godliness, I suppose, but it leads to something very dangerous. Very dangerous. There's a reason God gave a command in the New Testament. We know the command. There's a reason God gave the command that we should not neglect the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some. We know that that is a command. We live in that time. We live in that time. But I suggest this morning that people are pining away spiritually because of this great excuse not to come. What the psalmist is describing, he's not talking about places of stone or wood. He's ultimately here speaking of the blessings that come from the presence of the Lord, the blessings that flow from where the Lord is and where the Lord has chosen to be. There was an understanding that when God's people gathered in the Old Testament for worship on the Sabbath, there was something that was happening that you could not get anywhere else. And that's such an important point this morning. There was something happening that you could not get anywhere else. And that's what the psalmist here is describing. You'll notice in verse 2 that his flesh is crying out for God here because God had come and chosen to dwell. That's where the tabernacle dwelling is, in that place. And you know, that's when the church gathers today, what is happening. God Himself is with us. You know, we sung out a minute ago Psalm 92, and that is the only, notice in the description there before, that's the only psalm where it says, this is a song for the Sabbath. And I've often thought, that's an amazing thing that the Lord would do that. Why did He want that communicated to us? There's something about that psalm, if you listen to it, of what it's also saying to us. They would sing when they came into the Lord's house. It's a good thing to give thanks unto the Lord and to sing praises unto your name, O Most High. To show forth your loving kindness in the morning and your faithfulness every night. And the song for the Sabbath, they would come in the morning and they would come at night. I wonder, have we understood that? We were one of the last churches in Linden that had an evening service. Everyone dropped it. And one of the things I never wanted to do from the pulpit is to pound the pulpit and say, you need to be here Sunday nights. I struggled with that. I never did that. I had a problem a little bit with that. I didn't want to pound because I didn't want to create a joyless pride in what we were doing. And I was so thankful for the way it was done at the installation service. Forcing worship seems to be one of the most unnatural things to do, doesn't it? In light of this psalm. Does the Lord command us to worship? Absolutely. But the Lord always wanted from His people us to call it a what? A delight. The Lord always wanted from you to call this the great delight of your life. And I was afraid if I ever pounded that people would become very self-righteous, the ones who were there, and then take the CD and hand it to those who weren't there. You know? You think we've missed something today? You think we're struggling today for a reason? I'm going to talk about this a little bit tonight. Why did the Lord want us to delight in this? There's a few reasons. But in light of this psalm, there is a power. There is a power given to us that we can't find elsewhere. God set this up this morning, and, you know, we would have never dreamed this up. I would have never dreamed it up. I wouldn't be here, you know. But He set this up. He called this for you to come and to remove all distraction, to give you what we call the means of grace, to feed your souls, to strengthen you, to help you. And what does He do for you? Why did God's people love to gather and come to His house for worship from the beginning?
That's all the time we have for you today. We thank you for joining us here on Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. We hope you'll join us again next time for part two of this message from Pastor Chris. Thanks again. Until next time, God bless.